Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
On What's Next, we're going to go to Niagara Falls. We're going to talk with a couple individuals involved in Heart, Love, and Soul. Mark Batold is with us. He's the executive director, and Martha Lamage, program director. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Who wants to take the basic question? Heart, Love, and Soul. What's Heart, Love, and Soul?
Yeah, so Heart, Love, and Soul is a community-based organization that's been around for 40-plus years in Niagara Falls. We're a food pantry, dining room. We have a number of different social services. Back in 2021, we created a new program called Daybreak that increased the scope of services that we can provide. And we've really focused on homelessness issues and provide case management. We have showers, laundry, haircuts, a foot clinic. We have a community health nurse. And another aspect of the Daybreak program is that it's a one-stop center. So we have a variety of agencies throughout the community who come in and provide services on site. And the idea there is that when you provide access to a range of services in one location, it means that more people are getting access to those services and can address their needs. So it's a growing organization and one that has served a vital role in the community.
Let's maybe talk about just Niagara Falls just to start here. Much of what we talk about on What's Next is generally focused on Buffalo. But I think when it comes to a lot of the demographics and things along those lines, especially when it comes to poverty, a very similar picture, I would think. What can you tell us about the reality of Niagara Falls?
Yeah, so I think it's been a community in decline for decades. Probably the last 50 or so years, I think the population has decreased significantly from maybe 100 to 150,000 back in its heyday to under 50,000 mm-hmm. today. So many jobs have gone offshore, and the industrial base that drove the Niagara Falls economy is no longer there. And today, it's mainly a hospitality-focused economy. Healthcare is another big part of the economy. But I think the reality is that the jobs that are available really don't pay living wages for a lot of people. And, you know, there's all kinds of issues that come with that. So we deal a lot with food insecurity. We deal with homelessness. So we see folks who are struggling to make ends meet or can't afford to pay rent. We see mental health issues. We see substance use issues. All of these things kind of compound each other and create a very difficult situation, and we do our best to try and provide services to meet people's needs.
And as you were talking, you did mention you mentioned kind of like a subset of the people that you deal with, in the sense that there are people you just aren't able to make ends meet. You're not making enough money. So it's not a matter of necessarily people being unemployed, but just not being able to stabilize to their families or their sure. current situation, right?
Yeah, I think people will ask us, you know, who do we serve? What's the demographic? What's the population that we serve? And that's a difficult question to answer because we serve a wide range of people. Mm-hmm. You know, we serve folks that have lived in the community for a long time, but are low income. We serve people who are unsheltered. We serve people who have disabilities. We serve elderly disabled folks from the Niagara Falls Housing Authority. We have a specific grant from HUD to provide services. One of those buildings is just two blocks from us.
Okay.
So we see a wide range of different people. I think the common uniting factor is that most of them are low income with limited means and you know, challenging circumstances.
Yeah.
And Martha, you run the Daybreak program, yes. relatively new at Heart, Love, and Soul. Let's get into that just a little bit. What exactly is Daybreak?
So Daybreak is a one-stop shop social services program. And on that side, we provide immediate needs to guests that come in. So we have the services on site, which are showers. We have laundry, laundry services. We also have a computer room that's available to everyone in the community. Mm. We have nursing services, so we have a nurse on site. We also have our case management program, which also includes a community resource coordinator. And we have our one-stop center, which includes partners in the community of Niagara Falls that come on site to provide their services as well.
So you might, I mean, is there any kind of basic understanding of how many people you might be seeing in your program, whether on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis?
Ooh, it's...
I guess I'm wondering, does it fluctuate with some constant basis?
I think it fluctuates. Yeah. There's some moments where it seems very overwhelming, and there's some moments where it's steady. I would never say there's a moment where we're not seeing a lot, like a where it's more relaxed. It's always steady or just very busy. But I did actually look at some data yesterday, and last year, so 2024, I believe it was around, so not exactly, sure. we served 500 individuals. So, I mean, I think that number speaks volumes
right.
in how many people we see.
And it's interesting, and maybe both of you can get in on this a little bit, the term overwhelming. You know, you don't necessarily want to live in an overwhelming situation, but what really is it like? I mean, it's one thing for me to sit here and imagine what that is like, but what are you seeing in your program when you say that at times it can be overwhelming?
I think when it comes to, when I say overwhelming, there are a lot of people in the community that need help, mm-hmm. and we have limited staff. We are trying our best to keep increasing our staff, whether it's on the hospitality side or the Daybreak program side, but there always seems to be more need than workers. So I think that's where the overwhelm and stress can sometimes come.
Yeah, I think, you know, Martha's kind of pointing to a structural problem in the nonprofit sector itself, right? There's an expectation, I think, that nonprofits provide services and that the individuals who provide those services should be mission-driven. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, both Martha and I have kids, we have families, we have, you know, the same day-to-day needs and responsibilities that everyone else has. And it's difficult to, you know, do what we do when we're constantly fighting an uphill battle for funding. You know, I think we've done a pretty good job. Heart, Love, and Soul has, you know, been a beacon in the community and a trusted institution for decades. So we benefit from that. We have a lot of donors who, you know, have been with us for a long time and really believe in our mission. But as we've grown, we've been, you know, seeing that the growth comes with these growing problems, and, you know, we do our best to address them. In terms of what the need looks like for our guests, I think people are really feeling desperate. And you can see that in more families who come. You can see it in the increasing food numbers. You can see it in the increasing use of our shower and laundry services. You know, the need has an impact, I think, on everyone.
Yeah.
another thing that's happened over the last couple of years is that we've needed to add security as more people come in a you know, a limited space and coming with a lot of burdens. You know, people are carrying trauma, people have mental health issues, people have substance use issues. And we had an increase in behavioral episodes that required, you know, more of a security presence. And that's a major cost to the organization as well. So, you know, I don't think what is happening at Heart and Soul is unique. I think that's been going on, you know, across the nonprofit sector. But it does create a lot of challenges for, you know, staff and our guests alike.
And I think, and you just used the term, and you, I believe Martha did as well, guest. Very intentional use of the word here, right?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so we use that term as a reflection of what we believe about the people we serve, right? I think, you know, we're an institution that comes out of the Catholic tradition and Catholic social teaching, and, you know, we believe strongly in the fundamental dignity of each person, and guest is a way of recognizing them and also demonstrating the hospitality that we really prioritize when we interact with our guests.
You seem to have a follow-up on that, or
Martha? No, I think you hit it on the nail. I agree 100%.
Yeah, we
want anyone that walks in the door to feel dignified, to feel respected, just to feel treated equally. So guest, I feel like calling them guest is a way of doing that. And they feel that when we call them guest instead of clients. So,
yeah. And just if I'm hoping I'm not taking this on a tangent, but
no, we love tangents here.
Okay.
That's why we have this time.
Good. So the Daybreak program came out of a collaboration more than 10 years ago of a number of local nonprofits. And one of the things that was identified during that process of brainstorming and coming up with ideas and identifying problems was that the institutionalization of services is and can be demeaning, right? And it's not to walk into, say, a Department of Social Services building to fill out an application is not a wonderful experience, right? So we wanted to provide a built environment that is welcoming and inspiring. And one of the favorite things that I get asked when I'm giving tours to people is if the Daybreak building was a former church, because we have a you know, a truss system. It looks a little bit like a church, but it was not a church.
Okay.
But it was designed in a way to be uplifting and inspiring, and that's what, you know, we want our guests to feel when they come, that they're welcome, they're respected, this place is for them. We're going to uphold their dignity and treat them with respect, because the reality is, you know, in the world outside of Heart and Soul, it's often hard to find that dignity and,
sure,
and respect.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You said they done cut whiskey out. Let you have a little wine.
Where did you go in the 1930s when you wanted some of the groundbreaking music that would become rock and roll?
I don't like it, I know. I don't like it, you know.
Sometimes you just went to church. You're on the Soundbeat.
Some folks get drunk every once in a while just to speak their sober mind. And when they get caught in the trap, they want to put all the blame on Shine. God don't like it, I know. Oh no, he don't like it.
You're listening to Drinking Shine, an OK 78 from 1930, performed by Elder Charlie Beck. He was pastor of the Way of the Cross Church of God in Christ in Buffalo, New York. Beck would make about 60 recordings in his second career, though he viewed it as an integral part of his preaching. Said Beck, no use letting the devil have all the good music.
They tell me that this yellow corn will make the very best kind. But you'd better turn that corn to bread and stop that rake and shine. God don't like it, I know.
Beck may not be regularly named as a progenitor of rock and roll, but he probably should be. We'll show you why right now at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett Barry.
We at Buffalo Toronto Public Media take pride in bringing you your favorite national programs like Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition. But what makes WBFO so special are its local programs, learning together about how government works in bite-sized pieces on Compact Civics with host Corey McCamps.
Here's a quick guide on polling locations. A polling place is where you cast your ballot during elections. In America, the term polling place refers to the building, while polling station refers to the specific room or area where voting happens.
And diving into pop culture and local happenings on Group Chat with host Bentley and a revolving panel of friends in the know.
I really miss having to actually wait to tune in for a show and be there at the certain time, like having to run home and like turn on the TV at a certain time to like watch your show.
Like more national unity then too. Like we were all
tuned in. Everybody is watching at the same time and you can like call and
ever
say,
since
did you see
streaming has just gone downhill.
This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're talking today about Heart, Love, and Soul out of Niagara Falls, and with us their executive director, Mark Batesholt, and their program director, Martha Lamage. Let's talk about the guests, okay? I got to believe, I mean, Mark, you know, if you were a development director and now you're the executive director, so you're probably dealing a lot of big picture things. And Martha, you've been in the organization for a few years and now with the Daybreak portion of it. But let's talk about the guests. I want to hear some stories about, who the guests are, what they say, what they're experiencing, whether on the high end or unfortunately maybe not necessarily all that glowing, I guess, was the word to use.
Sure.
Talking about the guest, we serve a very diverse population. Yeah. So I think we get a little bit of everything. Just like Mark was saying, we serve those that just sometimes need a little bit of assistance, and we serve those that sometimes need a lot of assistance, like when it comes to homelessness. So we can get people that come in, and it's, I like to think of sometimes Heart, Love, and Soul as a space for people to come in and have fellowship. So it's an environment where people talk to each other. They're very happy. They're very grateful for the services that we have. Sometimes I think Michael, who does our social media and our website, he does a great job at promoting Heart, Love, and Soul. But sometimes I think a big part of it is the guests promoting Heart, Love, and Soul and the services that we provide. So I would say the majority of guests have a really good experience. But then, like Mark mentioned earlier, we do have those guests that are really struggling. When it comes to the homeless piece, when it comes to their mental health, it could be substance abuse, and sometimes it could be a combination. So they come in a very tough place, having a really hard time, and we just always try our best to meet them where they are and just place them in the right direction as far as assistance or just being that listening ear in that moment when it's needed to help calm them down and just make them realize, like, we are an agency that wants to help and that we see them. So, yeah, I think it's just a variety of experiences I think our guests have.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think there's so many stories that float through my mind of examples.
Feel free to share.
Yeah, yeah. Just examples of resiliency and basic goodness in people.
Yeah.
When I think about my own life and how I would respond if I was in the circumstances and situations of some of the folks that we serve, I'm not sure if I would be as gracious or as hopeful or as kind or what have you. So one of our guests, he unfortunately passed away at a very young age, had all kinds of health issues, and really relied on Heart and Soul for so much of his needs. you know, his healthcare needs. He came to our health nurse all the time. He was there for meals almost daily. You know, we tried to connect him to more of the help that he really needed. And unfortunately, you know, we weren't able to connect him, you know, in the way that we had liked, but, or would have wanted. Mm-hmm. But even in the circumstances that he had, he was continually in pain, and really you could see that he was suffering. One day he asked me for a dollar. I don't know if I should share this in front of Martha because this is against the rules, but I actually decided to give him a dollar. I trusted him that he was going to use it for what he told me, transportation. Mm-hmm. A week later or so, I saw him and he came up to me and he said, "Here's your dollar. I want to give it back." And I said, "Don't worry about it." And he said, "No, I want you to have this dollar." He said, "I don't have a lot, but at least I have my dignity."
Hmm.
And that's a story that will always resonate with me. You know, I think it's important to remember in our sector that dignity is always there. And I think we do as much as we can to try and honor that in the services that we provide.
I hate to use the term success stories, okay? But I'm just going to, have we seen guests who've come in, they've had these circumstances, and then maybe have come back to you later and said, you know, thanks for everything that you did, but, you know, now I've, you know, been able to, you know, access this or move on to this. Have you run into circumstances like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to share one?
Yeah, one that comes to mind for me and Mark are actually talking about this yesterday. It was an older, so when I was a case manager, actually, it was an older elderly gentleman that I was working with. And when I first met him, he had told me that he was experiencing homelessness and that his family was taking advantage of his finances. Mm. So because his memory wasn't that great, so he would pay rent and then they would tell him he doesn't live here, he can't live here anymore. So then he would stay at shelters, and then when it was time to pay rent again, they would welcome him back. So it was just a lot going on with him, and it really broke my heart. But just through working with him and connecting him to the appropriate resources in our case management program, which helps guests apply for housing programs that are available through HUD, we were able to assist him and get him connected to housing. And just by providing also that kind of housing counseling, just, you know, reminding him like, hey, this is your money. You need it to take care of yourself and to pay your bills. You know, you shouldn't let people take advantage, whether it's family, friends, or whoever it is. And just by building that relationship and trust with him, and like I said, connecting him to those resources and housing programs, this elderly man was finally able to get housing and live independently. And the biggest thing for me is just not being taken advantage of. So I think it's just that to me is a huge success story, especially because I had a foot in it and helping sure. get that assistance. But mm-hmm. we help a decent amount of people. And I think the success stories is what we constantly just keeps us moving forward, even with the barriers and all the difficulties, especially with everything economically right now. Mm-hmm. But it just helps us keep hope, and just we help one person at a time. So it's always worth it in the end.
And, you know, as you're telling that or explaining that reality of this man, I'm sure this is something both of you have to deal with from time to time. There, you know, it seems to be common to be able to just throw people who are in a certain circumstance, whether it's they're experiencing homelessness or whatever the case may be, into one kind of like, you know, one size fits all. This is the reasons why they're there. But here's a situation where the man apparently had the means,
right?
And yet it was a memory issue that led to. I mean, is that something that you deal with? I mean, when you're talking with your friends, your family, or just what you do, that people are very quick to judge and cast and not really understand some of the nuances that are the realities of your guests?
Yeah, I think so. I think that is a reality. I'm not sure that there is a great way to combat that other than by delving in
sure.
to a place like Heart and Soul and taking the time to get to know people. I think you know, we do a pretty good job of that. We try to get to know our guests and meet people where they're at. And I think our volunteer community, which is a very significant part of our operation, mm-hmm. is also excellent in, you know, treating people with respect and withholding that judgment. You know, sure, people make bad choices sometimes, but there's also the realities of systemic injustice that drive people into these desperate, you know, undignified and perhaps even inhumane situations. So it's important to always keep that in mind and try and understand where people are coming from. And there is no one size fits all. You know, one of the stories that I've been thinking about over the last couple days is about Tina, who I met one day. I was just going through the dining room and asking people how they were doing. I never had met Tina before. And for some reason, she stuck out to me, and I stopped to say hello, and I said, "How are you?" And she didn't really waste a moment with small talk and said, "Not good."
Oh.
And she had recently become homeless and said she had slept outside the night before and was still freezing. And then she started telling me about the pain, physical pain she's in, and really was in a place of wanting to end things. And through the conversations we had, we were able to connect her to Memorial Hospital in Niagara Falls, and she received, you know, the care that she needed at the time. And then some months later, it was probably a good 6 months later, she returned and looked happy and told me that she had found housing in Niagara Falls and was doing much better. You know, and the interesting thing about Tina is that she had gone to Niagara University. She had studied criminal justice, I think, and was a corrections officer at one time, and suffered an injury and dealt with that disability, which ultimately led to her no longer being able to keep the job. And then she fell into homelessness and issues with substance use. So, you know, she was an example of someone who does not fit the mold. And I think it's important to remember that there really is no such thing as a mold,
right?
Every circumstance is different and every person is unique.
Yeah, and I think it's something we were talking about yesterday as well. I think it's really important to note that a success story is what the need or goal of that individual person is. So in our minds as providers of food and housing assistance, to us the success is maybe how getting them housed permanently, right? Or providing them groceries for their family. But that could look very much different for the guest that comes in. So I think initially as a case manager, I had to learn that as well and change my perspective on success is meeting the need that they come in with. So another story that comes to mind is a guest of ours that was dealing with substance abuse for years, for a very long time. He would come in for help. We would help him. We would connect him to substance use resources. And sometimes he would go, sometimes he wouldn't, and then he would be back. And it would just be starting the process all over again. But anytime he came back, we welcomed him with open arms and tried to get him the assistance that he needed. And finally, one day it stuck. We did what we always did. And he went to, what is it called? He basically went to a clinic that he was there for a while that took care of him, and he overcame his substance use. And now, even more so, he's at Heart, Love, and Soul quite often, giving back and volunteering all the time.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really what the needs and goals of our guests are, what the success story is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's clear, just talking to you right here and talking about your guests, that there's a connection for the both of you when it comes to the guests. And I imagine it's the same with the staff. You mentioned the volunteers as well, Mark. And the other side of the coin, unfortunately. I mean, we talked about the guest who, you know, used a dollar of yours to get transportation and gave it back. So, but he ended up passing away. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are other circumstances like that. How does the staff deal with that? I mean, it sounds like you get very close to your guests, and you know, how do you keep that? How do you keep going on, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, that's a difficult question, and I don't know that I have a wonderful answer. I think, you know, for me personally, and I think for a lot of people who work at Heart and Soul, you know, they've have a mission heart, mm-hmm. and I think accept some of these hardships as part of the call to do the work. And I think, you know, we also have a lot of people of faith who, you know, I think rely on their faith and hope in something greater to get them through. And I would include myself in that. But it's often difficult. There's no way around it. You get to know people and form a relationship, and you want the best for them. And it does take a toll. I think we, institutionally, I think we've tried to respond by providing, you know, the best benefits that we can. You know, we're never going to be able to pay what we would like, but I think we've looked intentionally at, you know, increasing benefits. We've given more, and not just financially,
right?
But in terms of extra vacation week and more personal days. And sometimes we've worked with, you know, staff who have unique circumstances, mm-hmm. To try and help them out. You know, a lot of our staff have their own experiences, yeah. lived experience,
yeah.
And carry their own stories and trauma, you know, that can sometimes get triggered. You know, so we're aware of that, and we do our best to provide as supportive an environment as possible.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Corey here with Compact Civics. You've heard it 1,000 times. There are two things you can't escape. Death. Ugh. And taxes. Ugh. I get it. Nobody likes paying taxes. It's expensive, it's mandatory, which can feel unfair, and it's hard to know where your dollars are being spent. Let me break it down. We pay federal and state income taxes on the money we earn from jobs, businesses, or investments. Our system is progressive, which means the more we make, the greater percentage we're required to pay. The money goes into a big general fund to help pay for things like national infrastructure, defense, veterans, our justice system, and paying down our national debt. Payroll taxes are different. You and your employer both pay them. And the money funds Social Security and Medicare, which benefits older and disabled Americans who rely on that assistance. Businesses pay corporate taxes on their profits. This money also goes into that big general fund. Do you own property? Local governments tax you based on its value, but that money helps fund local services like schools and public safety. We could all look at taxes like a patriotic duty to make sure your money is being spent the way you want. Get out to the polls and vote for someone who will do just that.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's music hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits, featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
This is Jack Cruiser with the scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of the scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're talking with Mark Batesholt and Martha Lamage from Heart, Love, and Soul out of Niagara Falls. We've talked a lot about your guests and your services, but there's, you know, another side to this, and you did mention it earlier, Mark, about some of the, the way you're being funded. Let's get into that just a little bit, and perhaps not only talk about how the current situation is, but what could be the picture moving forward. But how does it work right now?
So we have a number of different funding streams, and as we've grown since 2021, when we added the Daybreak program, the landscape of funders has changed a little bit. So now probably about 60% of our grants, of our funding comes from grants and contracts and, institutional revenue like that. And then probably about 35% or so comes from fundraising and donations. So we have federal funds, we have state funds, we have funds that pass through the city. And all of those are important pieces. We also had some major grants to help us launch the capital, the Daybreak program. Mm-hmm. We ran a capital campaign to, help us raise those funds. So we have a mix of services, a mix of funding sources to support those different services. We're also right now exploring ways to access money through something called the 1115 waiver. It's a change in the way New York State is handling Medicaid reimbursements. And over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been more conversation about the role of community-based organizations like Heart and Soul in addressing what was then called the social determinants of health. Now the buzzword, I think, is health-related social needs.
Okay.
So essentially, there's recognition that agencies like ours are helping people stay healthy, and some of that money that goes to pay healthcare providers should go towards community-based organizations. So that's something that's taking shape now, and we're hoping that we'll be able to access some of those funds, in 2025 and beyond.
When it comes to federal funding, it seems to me there have been announcements of cuts on the federal level. I can't even keep up with them. The funding element, possibility, likelihood that any of that could impact you and your organization?
Yeah, there's definitely a possibility, but I'm not sure at this point how to assess the risk.
Right.
Because it's been one thing after the next, and constant changes, and it's hard to keep track of all the information. My understanding initially when funding assistance was supposed to be paused was that food support was not going to be impacted. So if that's the case, then, our food dollars, which primarily come from the state, but the state has a federal portion that goes into that pot. So my guess is that our food funding will stay steady. I'm not so sure about some of the other services that we provide. And we get money through CDBG and ESG, which are two pots of money that ultimately originate from the federal government, but the city administers. The city of Niagara Falls has been very supportive of the work that we're doing, but they might not have control over those decisions. We do get funding that comes directly from Housing and Urban Development, and those are the funds that I worry about the most. Mm-hmm. And if those get cut, that means that our case management services to Niagara Falls Housing Authority are at risk. Our case management services for people experiencing homelessness are at risk. And our new community resource work, which is supposed to do case management for people who haven't qualified in the past, could also be at risk. So those are major concerns. And, you know, we're doing the best that we can to identify dollar amounts attached to those services and come up with alternative plans in a worst case scenario.
And I couldn't help but notice, Martha, you kind of like shaking your head when Mark was making a couple of those comments. I suppose there's no sense in projecting on what may or may not be ahead, but I mean, for you, I mean, it seems like it strikes a personal chord, that the possibility that this could
yeah,
come.
It's very scary. You just thinking about the services that we currently provide through federal funding, it's still not even enough, right? Even with the new hires that we have, you know, like I said, there's a lot more demand than there is workers to provide the services to the guests. So if we cut what we already have, I think there's just going to be a huge crisis. Everything that we're dealing with right now is just going to be 10 times worse. So I think it's just very scary, but at least myself personally, I try not to let my mind go there, because if you dwell in it too long, I think it's just almost impossible to not be worried. So I think we try our best to stay very optimistic and just focused and just try to help as many people as possible now, and just hope that that reality is never a reality of federal funding being cut. So, yeah.
And you mentioned also that you have a significant volunteer base at Heart, Love, and Soul.
Yeah. We do.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so we probably have about 60 to 70 core volunteers who come in on a regular basis. And then on top of that, we have a lot of folks who come in, for a volunteer event. We have a lot of companies that will come in and do a volunteer day, or folks from universities that will come in. We have a great relationship with Niagara University, who sends students over to, help us in providing our services. And without those volunteers, it would be nearly impossible for us to do what we do. Every day we have folks that are assisting in the pantry, folks that are assisting in the food line. On the daybreak side, we have volunteers who help, you know, our guests with the items they need for showers, for laundry. They help staff a coffee bar that we have going all day, you know, for guests over at daybreak. And those contributions that the folks are making are really invaluable. We just couldn't do it without them. And, you know, one way we try to recognize them is through a annual dinner that we have that will be coming up in June.
Okay.
And we recognize various individuals or companies for, you know, their contributions to Heart and Soul or the community. We don't take for granted the services that they provide. They're essential to carrying on our work.
You could always use more volunteers?
Yes.
I don't think we could ever have enough volunteers.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Even just thinking about, this is kind of side note, but transportation is a huge barrier as far as getting guests to services that they need. I think that's just, transportation is a barrier across the board.
Right.
And if we had a plethora of volunteers, we could potentially, supply transportation. I know we're looking into possibilities of one day, hopefully in the future, of providing transportation to help release that barrier. But yeah, volunteers are huge. We could do so much more if we had more volunteers.
Why should somebody volunteer at Heart, Love, and Soul?
Because it's the best organization to work for and volunteer for. Yes, I'm a firm believer in that. I wanted to say, too, kind of going back a little bit, when we were talking about how does staff handle, everything at Heart, Love, and Soul with everything that goes on with guests. It can be a lot at times, but I just always want to give honor where honor is due. And it really starts at the head. I think if you look at any agency or organization and you see how it's run, it starts with the head. And Mark is an amazing executive director. He's an amazing boss. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think it would be very hard to still be working for an agency that serves this population, because it comes with a lot of moving parts. So having his support and his kindness, and just like the agency looks out for guests, Mark looks out for staff. So I just want to give honor where honor's due. It's huge. He's the head, and our Heart, Love, and Soul is the way that it is because of him, and then executive directors before him as well. So,
well, yeah. Thank you. That's very kind, but it really is a team effort, and we have a great group of people who've been committed for a long time. We have some new people that have come in, you know, particularly with the newer program, Daybreak, but so many people have made Heart and Soul what it is. My predecessor, Sister Beth Brosmer, retired in 2020, and she and Sister Barbara Full before her, from the Sisters of St. Francis of Stella Niagara in Niagara County, led the organization for over two decades, you know, and really put a stamp, their stamp, on the operation. And I think we try to honor that legacy, you know, and it's important for us to continue honoring that legacy, because it's a big part of who Heart and Soul is. We don't proselytize, but we try to, you know, live out our beliefs in our actions and the services we provide.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, we were talking about funding a little bit before, but, you know, philanthropy is welcome as well, obviously.
I think you
smile, the former development director smiles when I say that, but also I think I did see food donations and supplies is something that you welcome as well.
Yes.
How would that work? I'm always curious about that, because, you know, I mean,
yes,
food waste is a terrible thing, for sure.
Correct. Yeah. So it has to be shelf stable food. Mm-hmm. So a lot of folks will bring in canned goods, you know, cereals, things like that. We purchase a lot of our food. We have a contract through New York State that allows us to buy a good portion of our food. However, those funding levels have remained flat over the last 10 years, and food costs are going up, and
sure,
the number of people that we're serving is also growing. So there is a gap now between the contracts we receive for food and what we're actually spending. And we've been recognizing that and organizing food drives. You know, corporations can help by having a company food drive. Those things really are helpful and offset a lot of our costs.
Okay. All right. We're coming down to our final couple minutes here. And it's a question I ask with some frequency, and I'm going to ask both of you. Mm-hmm. Do you have hope? You see what's going on around Niagara Falls? You see what your guests are dealing with? Do you have hope? Hope moving forward?
Yeah, I think we have to have hope.
Yeah, have to.
And without it, it's hard to keep going. It is challenging. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat the things that we see and the realities that we're dealing with. Certainly in my career, I'm almost 50. I hate to admit that. But
You're just a kid.
I guess it's all relative.
But, yes.
You know, I have certainly seen in my own journey a decline of youthful optimism as I get a better understanding on, you know, how the world works and how entrenched I think a lot of the problems that we face are. There's a lot of injustice, and it's hard to sometimes see past that. However, there has to be hope in order to keep going, and there has to be better solutions, right? And I think those solutions are achievable. I don't think it's an absolute necessity in the United States of America that 40 to 45 million people have to live in poverty. There are ways to make the world a better place for all of us. And, you know, I think I trust in that. And, you know, I take courage in the people like Martha and the rest of our staff who, you know, work day in and day out to make the world a better place. So, yeah, I mean, certainly there's hope. And even in the city of Niagara Falls, I think there are, you know, people who are committed to the city and want to see improvements. There's not necessarily a silver bullet that's going to fix everything, but there are some wonderful people, you know, doing important work, which ultimately will transform the community. So, you know, we just have to keep our head up and keep trusting that, you know, ultimately those efforts will bear fruit.
Hope for you, Martha?
Absolutely. I second everything Mark said. I have hope, and I think you have to have hope. And I think the way that I keep my hope going is by just taking it one step at a time, a day at a time, and just helping each person that comes in. So just taking it person by person, because obviously there is a lot of social issues that exist. There is a lot of people that need help. So when you look at it in a holistic perspective, it can be very, very overwhelming. So I know what works for me. Like I said, just taking it person by person, and it just keeps the hope going. And like Mark said, we have a great team, and seeing how much our team cares and how much work they put in to try to help the guests and how much they advocate for the guest is really a beautiful and encouraging thing to see. So it just increases that hope even more so.
And then actually a final question coming off the final question. And it's this, and because you mentioned it, social injustice. We get to talk about that a little bit here on this program, obviously. But you, both of you, are right there, literally on the front lines of what's happening. I mean, you understand why your guests are there. Is it well known enough? The reality of social injustice? It's not a cliche. These are real individuals who are, you know, are dealing with significant hardship. And is it well known enough? I'm wondering, like, is there times you just want to scream and just say, how come nobody's paying attention? I'm wondering if that's the case, or do you think the word's getting out there and it's just not making it to the right ears yet?
Yeah, that's a good question, and not one that I've fielded before. I would say that no, there is not enough awareness. I think that if a critical number of people were aware, then we would see change happen more quickly. And I think it's hard to get the message out when we're constantly entertained and bombarded with different messages. And I'm guilty of it, too. My wife looked at my phone the other day and said, you're spending a lot of screen time on your phone, you know. And so there's just so many opportunity for distraction. Right. And it's not always easy to deal with. I sometimes think that there could have been an easier path, or maybe I should think about going on an easier path. But ultimately, that's not in the cards. I think I recognize that. And, you know, we have to do what we can in Niagara Falls and in Western New York to continue telling the message, sharing the story of Heart and Soul. And so not just sharing stories of, you know, the great services that we provide, but sharing stories that are real about the lives of the people that we see, right, and the injustices. And hopefully as that awareness builds, there will be a greater pace of change.
Martha, you have anything to add to that?
I don't think I do. I think you hit it on the nail. I think there needs to be more awareness. And I think those that are aware, like Mark said, like, we have a duty to increase the awareness, to let others know what's really going on. But I know there's a lot of issues going on in the world. And I think those that are aware, that have a hand in making a difference, are also very overwhelmed with what needs to be addressed first, you know, because there's so many issues. I've been to plenty of city council meetings, and we are a part of pretty much probably any committee out there that addresses community issues. So I think it's just finding what needs to be addressed first and going from there when they're all so important. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for the conversation this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to be here.
Our guests this morning from Heart, Love, and Soul in Niagara Falls, Martha Lamage, the program director, Mark Bateshold, the executive director. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.